8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order, and we will, we have a quorum. Or we do not have a quorum, not quite. So we will start, Representative Lean. We'll have you present your bill. And members, we've got 5 bills, and I would like to get through them this morning rather than coming back later tonight. But we do have to absolutely get through 5 bills before the end of the day, one way or the other.
Mr. Chairman?
Chair Davids.
What room do we have reserved? So we...
I don't know. One of the good rooms, I am. Oh, not. I am told not one of the good rooms. So, not one of the good rooms.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, why do you look at us when you say we need to get out of here tonight?
Because there's no one on my side here today.
I wanted to point that out, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
And I'm not going to listen to any roll calls. I'm going to be ignoring that. If anyone calls for a roll call, I'm going to ask for 15 hands if anything occurs. Oh, we now have a quorum. Yes, Representative Carlson.
You said no one was on this side.
Bunch of empty chairs over there.
If we can rewind the tape and I can... restate that comment. There are a few there on this side. We do now have a quorum. So before we go to official business, Representative Leslie Gard moves to approve the April 3rd, 2019 minutes. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote on those minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The April 3rd, 2019 minutes are approved. Representative Lean, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 578 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
And you do have the A2 amendment. Would you like to move the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I do move the A2 amendment.
Anything we knew? Thank you, Representative Lean. Anything we need to know about the A2 amendment before
yes.
we vote on that?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment would simplify the income definition for this credit, this K-12 tax credit, and match it up with other income definitions in current law for the working family credit and dependent care credit. The amendment would also hold harmless people who qualify for the credit under current law but would not qualify under the proposed free and reduced lunch guideline for the credit.
Very good. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments on the A2 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Lean, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I appreciate hearing this bill today, House File 578. It's fairly simple, pretty straightforward piece of legislation, and the goal is to restore eligibility for the K-12 education tax credit to the families it was originally intended to serve. The K-12 education tax credit covers 75% of the cost of after-school enrichment activities like driver's education, some purchases and rentals of musical instruments, and even computer hardware and software. This bill would benchmark the household income limit to eligibility for free and reduced lunch for the credit. In short, this means that if a family who we have already determined is in need of assistance paying for school lunch would also be able to qualify for assistance paying for after-school programs. In real dollars, this means, for example, a family with two parents and one child, the income limit before the amendment would have been $38,443. Of course, we have now lowered that so that they'll still qualify at the $33,500 level. For a family of children with three children, the income limit would be $54,427. The tax credit is truly a statewide credit in its scope and reach. In the most recent year for which public data is available, 2015, the tax credit was claimed by taxpayers in all 87 counties. 45% of the tax filers claiming the tax credit and nearly 44% of the amount claimed came from outside the 7-county metro. These numbers are essentially right on par with the state's general population of tax filers. Nearly two-thirds of filers claiming the credit came from outside Hennepin and Ramsey counties, demonstrating that this bill will indeed impact families in all types of communities across our state. I would now like to either stand for questions, Mr. Chair, or we can turn it over to testifiers to make comments on the bill.
Thank you. Representative Lean, I think we'll go to the testifiers. So welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Norris, and I'm the director of Minnesota After School Advance. I want to thank you for the opportunity to come before you today to testify in favor of House File 578. I also want to thank Representative Lean and our several co-authors who are on this committee. Minnesota After School Advance is a collaboration between Youth Prize and Venn Foundation that aims to help families statewide utilize the K-12 education credit to pay for educational, fine arts, and performing arts after school programs. The household income limit for the maximum K-12 education credit has not changed in over 20 years. As a result, there are approximately 100,000 fewer families who are eligible for this credit today than when it was enacted back in 1997. This bill offers multiple benefits. First, it adjusts the income limit to restore eligibility to those families this credit was originally intended to serve. Second, it makes it more equitable by factoring in household size. And third, it makes it easier for families to determine eligibility, which we think will increase utilization for this important tool. This credit is a critical tool to help pay for activities like tutoring, dance classes, STEM camps, piano lessons, and driver's ed. It gives families the freedom and the flexibility to choose activities that are appropriate for their children. And it's available to families in communities all across Minnesota. And that statewide reach is one of the main reasons that this bill has received the endorsement of the Minnesota Music Teachers Association and their nearly 1,000 members statewide. And yet, the most common barrier we hear from our partners across the state is the same. The income limit is too low. They have families that want to participate and qualify for many other types of public assistance, but their household income is too high for this outdated income limit. That's why this bill is so critical. It's also important to note that there's precedent for the changes we're proposing in this bill. For instance, there are several other programs in state statute that provide sorts of educational assistance that use free and reduced lunch as the benchmark for determining eligibility. And this committee in 2017 adjusted the dependent care credit to increase the income limit for receiving the maximum credit like we're proposing here and replaced a similarly complicated definition of household income with the simpler adjusted gross income. For these reasons, I strongly urge you to support House File 578 and include it in the omnibus. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Williams-Toth, and I'm a licensed social worker and family support specialist at the Community Action Center of Northfield. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of House File 578. The Community Action Center is a nonprofit organization located in Northfield, Minnesota, that works with a large number of low-income families. The mission of the Community Action Center is to promote a healthy, caring, and just community for all people through resources, advocacy, and volunteer effort. Northfield has a lot of opportunities for youth in the community to participate in after-school programming. However, the families we work with face a number of different barriers when trying to access these programs. Oftentimes, the families that the Community Action Center works alongside with do not have the money to pay the fees associated with some after-school programs. These families are sometimes forced with having to choose between keeping the lights on, feeding their families, or enrolling their children in after-school activities. That may seem dramatic, but that is the reality for a lot of the families we work with that are living paycheck to paycheck. However, the desire for these families to enroll their children in activities is quite obvious. The families that I have the honor of working with recognize the importance of getting their children involved in after-school activities and often voice this to me. Unfortunately, a lot of times this conversation ends with the adult saying, unfortunately, this is just something we cannot afford right now. Sometimes we are fortunate to have scholarship dollars we can use to assist families, but the availability of these dollars is unpredictable and can change on a whim. However, for the families that are able to access the tax credit, it can make a substantial difference. You have before you today the written testimony of two students, one from Northfield and one from Grand Rapids. While they couldn't join us in person today, they wanted to convey to you in their own words the profound impact that being able to access after-school programs via the tax credit has had on their siblings. Our organization works with one of these families that has three children enrolled in piano lessons. These lessons cost a total of $600 every 3 months, an amount they would not be able to afford on their own. In total, the tax credit will save this family $1,800 per year. and it will save them $360 a year compared to what we were able to provide with just Community Action Center-funded scholarship assistance. Those amounts may seem small to some of us, but they are substantial amounts to the families we serve and who benefit from this tax credit. There was more than just a financial benefit to the family from this program. 15-year-old Veronica Bermudez-Torres said it best in her written testimony. She said, "This program has really helped my family. It has helped my parents to make our dreams come true." With this bill, you have the ability to write a similar story for tens of thousands of families across the state and open up possibilities for their children they never imagined. For this reason, I urge you to support House File 578 and include it in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you very much. And any welcome? Please proceed.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Marcus Pope, Vice President of Youth Prize. In 2018, we launched a partnership with the Venn Foundation to sponsor Minnesota After School Advance to help families access after school programming utilizing the K-12 education credit. This tax credit helps parents provide opportunities for their kids that otherwise would be impossible. Low-income families lack adequate access to after school programs, in particular, specialized programs such as dance classes, music lessons, and summer camps. The importance of these opportunities is clear. Each year, young people have approximately 2,000 hours of discretionary time. This is equivalent to a full-time job. Research shows that children who participate in high-quality after-school activities develop strong social skills, improve study habits and grades, improve school attendance, graduate at higher rates, and gain workforce skills. In a state where reducing the achievement gap is an urgent priority, increasing access to the K-12 education credit by restoring eligibility to those who it was originally intended to benefit is a really practical strategy. Thank you, and I urge you to support House File 578.
Very good. Mr. Pope, thank you so much. Representative McDonald, do you have a question for the testifiers?
Mr. Chair, I do not. It's for staff.
Okay. Hold on. Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on House File 578 as amended? All right. Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for either the author or staff. Under the Minnesota Department of Revenue's estimate, says the items in which that are refundable or credit, and it states a non-religious textbook. I do know that our schools, our public schools, does teach world religions, and oftentimes there's a book that you have to purchase, the students have to purchase on religions, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, Judaism, Muslim, et cetera, et cetera. So why would that be excluded in the bill or in current law?
Can anyone, Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I know that at some point in the past, this credit, to the extent that it was potentially used to pay for, like, religious education, was subject to court challenges, as well as the K-12 subtraction. And so I think that there was just, in drafting these laws, there was some, you know, I think, attention paid to try and make sure that it survived court scrutiny. So I think that may be where that that language originally came from. But I can probably follow up with you after committee with more detail on that.
And Representative McDonald, when I would teach world history, we would teach, you know, the six kind of major religions. And, you know, that's – and so I would think a book that was on world religions is not considered a religious book, so to speak. So, I mean, you could probably do that for a class.
Mr. Chair, I should hope so. We would hope so, certainly.
Yeah. And not Representative Donald.
And then the other question I had was, sporting events. So I see you've got off-school activities such as dance lessons and musical instruments lessons, et cetera, et cetera. Would that include perhaps golf lessons or other sporting events that a student or family would like to participate in?
Mr. Norris.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, under the current statute, sports or athletic activities are not eligible. It's limited to academic, fine arts, and performing arts after school or summer activities.
Mr.
Representative
Chair,
McDonald.
Then in summary, because I know you want to finish tonight, today, so we don't come back. Representative Lean, perhaps an amendment either orally or another time, that we should add sporting activities. You know, sporting activities are very expensive, as we all know, for families. No matter what income level you are, they're very expensive. I think Aiden and Jacob were in trap. It was like $800 just for trap for the two of them. Thank goodness that Jacob's off to college where it's cheaper now. But, or perhaps not. Yeah. So anyway, but the important lessons, as we all know here, especially you coaches here and teachers, Representative Fabian and Mark Court, the important lessons that students learn in sporting activities. And to exclude those, I think we do a disservice. When we include dance lessons and playing the trumpet with the drums or buying a computer with software, but yet we exclude the sporting events. And I know that as a fellow Lions Club member in our community, the sporting groups are always looking for more money. So I think we should add this as an amendment. Representative Lean, what say you?
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Representative McDonald, I certainly agree. I mean, that athletics and sport and competition and teamwork can certainly add, you know, a lot of value to a child's education and just their social education and everything like that. At this time, I would not be inclined to accept that just because I think it would be a much more substantial change to the existing credit, to the existing program than, I just think something like that should probably have a hearing on its own. Largely because I assume it's going to increase the cost of the bill quite a bit. So I guess that's what I would say that. I mean, I'd certainly be open to those conversations around, you know, equipment and those sorts of things. But at least at this time, I think that would be a more substantial change to the bill than would be, I don't know, in my view, at least allowable under just an oral amendment. So,
anyone else? Representative Lean, any final closing comments on the bill?
No, Mr. Chair, committee members, I appreciate your time and attention on the bill, and Representative McDonald, I'm certainly open to those conversations with you moving forward.
Yep. Very good. Representative Lean renews his motion to lay over House File 578 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you to the testifiers this morning. Thank you. Representative Les Lagarde, wow, he's already moved over. Would you please move your bill and welcome to your committee,
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and I would ask that we can move House File 844 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Yeah. Very good. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. In 2017, the legislature approved the tax relief for Minnesota businesses. However, the relief was not extended to Minnesota mining companies given their unique tax structure. House File 844 attempts to address this disparity by creating a tax credit tied to a mining company's mining activity and payment of occupation taxes. In other words, the credit is only available for those companies who are effectively engaged in mining in Minnesota and currently paying occupation taxes tied to their production. It would not apply to a company that is not paying taxes for whatever reason. The credit is calculated at 15 cents a ton of taconite produced in a given year. While the credit does not generate a significant rebate to the mining companies doing business in Minnesota when compared to what was enacted in 2017, it clearly sends a message to those companies and their employees that they are an important contributor to our economy, especially for those living and working in northern Minnesota. With me today, I have Kelsey Johnson, the president of the IMA, to answer any questions you may have.
Very good. Ms. Johnson, did you want to testify or just here for resource?
Hello, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Kelsey Johnson. I'm president of the Iron Mining Association. I can certainly answer any questions that people may have.
Representative Pluszynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, you know, I was just looking at the bill on line 2.1. It says gross tons. I know we've had some of the reimbursements from a ton perspective as a long ton. Would this be calculated from a regular ton or a long ton?
It's a very good question. Mr. Chair, Representative Sudzinski, it would probably go to a short ton. Short tons versus long tons are metric, I can get into that if you'd like me to. But
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Les Lagarde. I understand the equity issue of doing the same thing to other companies that everybody gets. What's the benefit to the company Why should we give tax breaks to a mining or any other company that we have?
Mr.
Representative Lessegaard.
Mr. Chair and Representative, because the Iron Range is special. No, in all honesty, what this does is it allows the mining companies to invest back into their facilities and therefore make them more cost productive in ability to compete more globally.
Representative,
thank you. Just with one follow-up question for the representative, is that very similar to most other companies in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Lessegaard.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think that the mining companies are maybe a little unique in the whole tax structure, which I'm not the gentleman or the representative to get into that. But I think that this is a little more unique on the Iron Range. Kelsey may be able to answer that better than I could.
Yeah. Ms. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, basically, the way that the tax structure is for the occupation tax, it's based on the mine value. It's different than a corporate franchise tax, and so we actually will pay more depending on the year based on the mine value. And so that's why this is such an important incentive. We actually are competing on a global marketplace, and the tax structure as it stands right now in Minnesota is very different than any other state that we operate in, and we continually see our tax rates go up. It's built on inflation for the production tax side of the iron mining industry. So when it comes to the occupation tax, this is the one that we'll be looking toward. The production tax is mostly distributed to communities and schools and the IRRRB.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. You know, I think that just is an example of where we could talk about the uniqueness of almost any industry and how it impacts them. But the reality is that every business would love to reinvest back into their community and reinvest back into their own production and so forth. And I think when we talk about reductions in tax implications, that certainly has an impact there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Johnson, could you update us on the rate or the level of production of taconite presently?
Ms. Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, currently we're sitting right around 40 million tons, and that's up from the 2015-2016 numbers where our number and total tonnage dipped below 29 million tons. The taxes that are calculated are based on a three-year tonnage average. And so at this point in time, I think the production tax is at $2.75 per ton. And then the occupation tax is based, like I said, on the it's based more on the mine value.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good. Any other questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, Representative Lessegaard, didn't we see hear this bill previous or another one like it?
Representative Lessegaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McDonald, yes, it had bipartisan support last year, but it got vetoed in 2018. My apologies, Mr. Chair. I thought you were talking about this bill. No, the Taconite Municipal Aid is different than this bill.
Thank you, Mrs. Johnson. Ms. Johnson. Real quick follow up,
McDonald.
In the 10% towards the University of Minnesota, 40% K-12, and 50% general fund, is that then just stayed in the Iron Range area, University of the U of M in Duluth, and then the other school districts, or does that go statewide?
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the 10% general support to the University of Minnesota is statewide. The 40% is also. For the K-12 schools, that's also statewide. So every student in the state of Minnesota, either in the university system or the K-12 system, benefits from iron mining tax dollars.
Any other questions? If not, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 844? See none. Representative Lessegaard, any closing comments?
Thank you for your time.
Representative Lessegaard renews his motion to lay over House File 844 for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill. Thank you much. Next, we have House File 2763. Representative Hansen, do we have a motion? Well, Representative Becker Finn.
I will move House File 2763 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to probably amend that motion. I think that based on the fact that the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the solid waste tax and so forth is anchored in the Environment Committee, I think it should go to the Environment Finance Committee. So I would make a motion that we would re-refer to Ways and Means and then be sent to Environment Finance.
Okay. So Representative Fabian moves to re-refer to Ways and Means and then off to Environment and what's the name of that committee?
Environment Finance Committee.
Environment Finance Committee.
And Mr. Chair, I just think that we haven't heard this. The bill was introduced on 4-1. I think it really needs to go to the Environment Finance Committee because of the jurisdiction that exists over the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And I would request a roll call, actually.
Roll call's been called for. There will be a roll call. Representative Hansen, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would oppose the motion to refer to the Environment Finance Committee.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, can you tell me why you would oppose it?
Representative Hansen.
As Chair, this and Representative Fabian, we heard the spreadsheet in the committee already about the appropriation, and we'll be voting on it later today about contingent appropriations that are in this. So there's no need to hear that, as we've already discussed it in the Environment Finance Committee.
Yeah, the bill increases the tax rates that exist. So it's increasing the tax rate here. So I'd ask members to oppose the amendment here. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the conversation, but I still strongly believe that because of the Board of Water and Soil Resources that's involved here and grants to local SWCDs, largely that jurisdiction falls in the Environment Committee. And I think that it sends a bad message to the people of Minnesota if we're not going to hear the bill in that committee. I'm a member of the committee. I'm the lead there. And I think it would be an important issue. We all support the SWCDs, and we're trying to do some good stuff for them. But I think for the sake of transparency and disclosure, we really should have this and have a good hearing on it and hear from the SWCDs and the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the administration and see what they think about it. And that's that's what the committee is for and the committee process is for, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think someone from the SWCDs is here. So I and I know that we posted this you know, with plenty of notice for folks to know that we are going to be discussing this today. And I would also oppose the motion to bring it back to, you know, to send it anywhere else. I think it's clearly, it's a tax bill, and I think we can have that discussion here.
Any other discussion? If not, the roll call's been called for. What we're voting on is the Fabian Amendment to re-refer this to Ways and Means and then off to the Environmental Finance Committee. So the clerk will take the roll.
Marquardt?
No.
Lislegard? Davids?
Yes.
Becker Finn?
No.
Brand?
Nay.
Carlson?
No.
Erickson?
Yes.
Fabian?
Yes.
Gomez? Lesh?
No.
Lean?
No.
Loeffler?
No.
McDonald?
Yes.
O'Neill?
Absolutely.
Petersburg?
Yes.
Schumacher?
Yes.
Schultz? Swadzinski?
Yes.
Zhang?
No.
Joachim?
No.
He's ex officio.
He just makes taxes.
There being 8 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. So, Representative Hansen, to the bill. House File 2763.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2763 raises the several of the solid waste fees, and it also establishes a account for some of those fees that were in the general fund. The solid waste fees are generally distributed 70% to environmental fund and 30% to the general fund. You will see as you go through the bill, the rates under Section 1 are raised from 9.75% to 11%, on Section 2 from 17 to 19, on Section 3 from 60 to 67.5 cents per cubic yard of waste capacity, and on, if you look at, on Section 4, it goes from $2 to $2.25 a ton.
You, Representative Hansen, do you have any testifiers?
I'm not sure if the agencies are here, but I do not have any.
So I think before we go to members, let's go to testifiers. So I do have a couple folks on the list, Mr. Carnival and Mr. McCann. And welcome, and please state your name and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival, a Grand Chez Carnival Law Firm, representing the National Waste and Recycling Association. Although Representative Hansen's bill sends funds to the Soil and Water Conservation District, certainly a worthwhile cause, it's important for the committee to understand that the solid waste tax was instituted to provide for solid waste reduction and increased recycling. And that's where we think is the appropriate use of that those funds. We have been supporters of using that entire tax money for solid waste purposes and taking the 30% that's currently sent to the general fund and redirecting that to the solid waste efforts that are in the environmental fund. So using that money in the current format is not something we favor. As you can imagine, we also are not favoring the increase in that tax, especially if some of that money will be directed for non-solid waste activities. I think it's important for the committee to understand the magnitude of the solid waste management tax. As Representative Hansen mentioned, the current rates are 9.75% statewide for residential waste and 17% for commercial waste. On top of that, you should know that the counties impose fees as well, and in Ramsey County, for instance, there's an additional 53% tax on commercial solid waste and 28% on residential solid waste on top of those 9.75% and 17% rates. So solid waste is taxed very, very heavily in this state. We're opposed to any increase, and especially if that money is in fact diverted out of solid waste purposes, and we in fact like to see any money that's currently going to the general fund to be redirected to solid waste purposes. Happy to take whatever questions, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you very much. Representative Fabian. I'm sorry. Did you have a question?
Yes.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Carnival, the definition of commercial, would that include apartment buildings, or would apartment buildings be residential?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I believe it's 4 residential units and above are commercial.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So who pays, ultimately, who pays, excuse me, I'm sorry, who pays the increase in the solid waste tax in a apartment building that's above 4 units?
Mr. Carnival.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, as with all taxes, the residents or the generators of the tax ultimately pay the tax.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, here we go again. We're talking about how taxes need to be progressive, and I see here one of the most regressive taxes we have. So we're hurting the poorest of the poor and the middle class the most. And so it'll be interesting. I'm waiting with great anticipation for Monday morning to see how progressive the proposed tax bill is.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Monday morning.
Thank you. Anyone further on House File 2763? Please come forward. And welcome. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris McCon. I'm the Solid Waste Director for Otter Tail and Wadena Counties. I'm also the Executive Director for the Prairie Lakes Municipal Solid Waste Authority, a five-county joint powers authority that operates a 56,000-ton-per-year waste-to-energy facility. I'm a member of the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Solid Waste Administrators Association, and Minnesota Resource Recovery Association. And on behalf of those organizations and the Partnership on Waste to Energy, I'm here to share our opposition of House File 2763. Our organizations support public policy initiatives to appropriate 100% of the solid waste management tax to waste management and reduction programs. This legislation takes us in the opposite direction by increasing these taxes across the board and designating new general fund dollars to a specific cause. I'm an environmental engineer by education with over 20 years of engineering practice. I have fished, camped, tented, boated, and canoed in Minnesota all my life. I understand the value of the work our local government partners do on soil and water conservation, and yet we must speak in opposition to this proposed funding source for them. Here's our reasoning. The solid waste management tax was created for and should be used to manage solid waste and reduce its environmental impacts, as the name states. All aspects of solid waste management are taxed by the solid waste management tax, including container rental, garbage collection, transportation, tipping fees, combustion, and disposal. No parties are exempt from this tax. Residents, government, nonprofits, and commercial businesses all pay the tax. The state currently gives back a fixed amount of the solid waste management tax to counties for SCORE grants to promote solid waste management. 22 years ago, about half of the solid waste management tax revenue was given back as SCORE grants, which is $17.25 million. Of $36.2 million in fiscal year 1997. Between 1997 and 2018, solid waste management tax revenue more than doubled, but the percent contribution to SCORE grants has been cut in half, respectively, statewide from 47.6% to 20.9%. Meanwhile, the cost and level of expectation for our services has grown significantly. 30% of the revenue is deposited in the general fund for unrelated spending, and we have been working to address that to manage our growing waste issues. The old KISS philosophy of keep it simple and straightforward has merit. Please don't raise the four taxation rates within the solid waste management program to fund other programs. We appreciate that the increased revenue would also mean dollars, more dollars for solid waste programming through potential allocations in the House Environment Finance Bill. Local governments, solid waste administrators, and industry partners support additional funding for these purposes, but think that the tax dollars that are already collected for this purpose through the solid waste management tax should be used. The counties have been given the responsibility of planning, development, and implementation of comprehensive solid waste management programs. We are concerned about increasing costs users pay for solid waste management in order to fund unrelated programs. Thank you for your consideration on this important matter, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. McCon, for coming today. And you had said that you are in charge of or representing the waste-to-energy facility. And I'm wondering if you're familiar with a GRE plant that recently closed that was a waste-to-energy facility in Elk River, and which was a great loss to that community and a great loss to really trying to convert, like as you do, waste to energy and making something useful out of it. Because as you know, the recycling market has really fallen out, and there is, you know, China stopped taking things, and so it's really, really a challenge to even recycle responsibly because there's no place to send it. So the Elk River plant was incredibly helpful because it took all of that out of the waste stream and turned it into energy. So my question to you is, do you know why the GRE plant was closed down? And the plant that you represent, is it looking at the same fate? And would this impact that fate?
Mr. McCon.
Mr. Chair and
Representative O'Neill.
Representative O'Neill, thank you. A couple comments I would have are, one is that doing the right thing is often more expensive than doing the wrong thing. So in that case, it is more expensive to combust waste because what we're doing is we're doing the best thing to make the least amount of environmental impact. Mm-hmm. There still, I think, is a residual public perception that combustion is a bad thing because you see a smokestack. But the reality is when you landfill waste, you're creating a bad legacy for our children, our grandchildren. I know for our facility, being owned by five counties, we are owned by the five counties. And I work with, you know, the voting members of our facility are county commissioners. And I want to say for all of them, all five counties, how we developed the contract for the joint powers and how we're supported by those counties is creating a proposal for them. We are strong, and we will remain in operation for many years to come. And I'm familiar with GRE, but I'm not intimately involved. What I would say is that because of the words I'll use are waste supply agreements, waste designation, things like that to secure that organization so that it doesn't have to compete with a landfill that's cheaper. They don't have that support that we do have.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that, because I know that they shut down because they weren't financially viable to the company that owned them. Mm-hmm. And even though they had tipping fees that were much higher than landfill tipping fees, it still didn't mitigate the loss. And they just couldn't maintain that loss over time. But it was a great loss, I think, as you just stated. You know, and I wish we could talk about this in Energy Committee. I wish we could talk about this in the Environment Committee. But we're not going to, so we're going to have that conversation here because we're not sending it to either committee. So we're going to have that conversation here. But I think it's an incredible loss. And my fear is that, you know, you are one plant. One plant is already shut down in Minnesota that was a waste to energy. And my fear is when we do things like this, when we increase taxes on every aspect of waste, that it makes it even less viable for a plant that you represent. Now, thankfully, you've got a great infrastructure and you've got support between five counties, and that's helpful. But my fear is some of the other plants would be impacted just as GRE was, because they just financially couldn't continue. So now where is all that waste going to go? It's going to be landfill, most likely. I don't think they're going to truck it up to you, right, because that's financially unsustainable as well. So, you know, again, I wish we could talk about this and Energy Committee or the Environment Committee to talk about impacts of increasing these taxes and what that does and pushes more into the landfill as opposed to going to your waste-to-energy facility, which thankfully I had an opportunity to tour GRE's facility in Elk River before they shut down, and it was quite remarkable. I mean, I remember seeing entire couches and mattresses come in and things that you don't want that in a landfill. Big, huge, bulky items, and they were able to break them down, mm-hmm. extract out the precious metals. So if there was any kind of steel or aluminum, they were able to extract that out of the waste stream and then convert the rest of it that was easily to incinerate to incinerate it and turn it into electricity. So I don't want to see anything like this impact that industry. And I know that GRE's already been impacted because they Flat couldn't afford to continue to do it. But that would be my concern, is that not only are we making this incredibly expensive now for low and middle income folks, because this is, as the chair David's already pointed out, third most regressive tax that we have in Minnesota behind cigarette tax and the gas tax. So, you know, I just think this is terrible, terrible tax policy. And thank you for helping us understand a little bit on the energy side, since this isn't going to go to either one of those committees. So thank you for your testimony today and for coming and letting us understand some of that.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll point out we didn't hear the mining bill in environment policy or finance either, and I think you know, we don't always need every tax bill to go through every single place we can imagine that it has impact. Wondering if staff can answer a question. I just want to clarify a couple things. So just to get us back to the bill, it raises one of the rates by 1.25 percentage points and then the commercial rate by 2 percentage points. When was the last time that we changed this tax at all?
Anyone, Mr. Klayman or Ms. Hakler? And if we don't know, well, we can find out later.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Becker-Finn, I'm not sure when the last time was, but I can look into that for you.
Oh, Ms. Shillis. Moving forward. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Kathy Shellhouse, Fiscal. I'm looking at Department of Revenue's tax handbook, and it tells me that the last time that the rates were changed was in 1997, when this the municipal solid waste tax was repealed and replaced by the solid waste management tax. And then in the year 2000, it was broadened somewhat to include the use tax, which I'll defer to Ms. Dalton, but that's probably a technical change.
Thank you very much. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I heard is we haven't, you know, increased this in 22 years. And, you know, I don't think it's that big of a change. I think it could be really impactful with what we're able to do. And also wanted to point out, so my understanding is, and if staff could clarify, so currently 30% goes to the general fund, correct?
Ms. Hagler?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's interesting to me, you know, some of the testimony. So right now, 30% of it goes to the general fund, which could be spent on anything, and nobody seems to have any, you know, they're not trying to change that. But when we're designating that it go to something important that actually is more impactful for our greater Minnesota counties, now there's kind of a problem with what designating that money. So I mean, the 70%, you're still getting 70% to the environmental fund, which is directly related to solid waste and the issue that we're talking about. So it's I just want to point out, it's kind of interesting that when 30% was going to the general fund, nobody was trying to change that. But when we're specifically saying, you know, why don't we take care of our, make sure that our soil and water conservation districts have the funds on a more ongoing basis to make sure that they can continue to do the good work that they do, that that now all of a sudden it feels like it's somehow taking away from the solid waste folks. So either way, there's still 70% going to the environment fund, and that doesn't change. So, you know, glad we're having this discussion. Garbage is expensive. As we, you know, with some of the bonding projects and the different things that have come up with dealing with trash, I'm glad we're having this discussion. I thank Representative Hansen for bringing this forward.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I see that the Conservation Minnesota is not supporting your bill. Would you know why they wouldn't support your bill?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, no.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. So just I was reading their letters, so that was curious, since they do such great work in the state to conserve and make sure that our environment is healthy and preserve it for our future generations. So just curious about that. Staff, could you or the Department of Revenue just estimate how many number of increases are in the Representative Hansen's bill? As I look through.
Representative Hansen, can you answer that? What different areas?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, four.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. And Representative Hansen, I would presume as a business in my community and a household that the tax increase would also be an increase to those who use a waste hauler and pay a fee monthly.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, if you read through the fiscal note, you'll see it applies commercial, residential. It's a broad base increase as the tax is right now, and as Representative Becker Finn noted, hasn't been changed since 1997. I would note where the money goes, Representative McDonald, that the 70% is broken down in the Environment Finance Bill to $400,000 each year. The Commissioner of PCA for competitive recycling grants. $750,000 each year is to the Pollution Control Agency for reducing and diverting food waste, redirecting edible food for consumption, removing barriers to collecting and recovering organic waste. Of that amount, $500,000 is for increased food rescue and food and waste prevention. And then $3 million each year is to the PCA for grants to local units of government to transport wood waste, because we have ash trees and buckthorn and storm-damaged trees that are going into the landfills and are taking up space. We're running out of landfill space, committee members. We're running out of landfill space. The waste-to-energy sites are closing down because wind and solar are cheaper for purchasing. $2.9 million each year, first year, and $3.5 the second year are appropriated from the Environmental Fund to the Pollution Control Agency for additional score block grants to counties. So it is going to go. There's additional dollars. So 70-30 is not changing. We're increasing the amount, which hasn't been increased, across the board, and that money is going to go to the purposes that I mentioned, as well as setting up the general fund, actually taking the general fund that goes anywhere and saying it should go to stormwater districts. I think the opposition you're hearing and you're seeing is that many organizations have policy that says we should increase the percentage to capture back the general fund, go from 70 to 75 to 80. Representative Hornstein has had that bill for several years. I would like to have been able to do that, but my budget target did not allow that. I would still like to do that because I think it's the right thing to do, but we have what's in front of us right now. So instead of changing that because we couldn't, we're getting additional revenue to cover these needs that are needed in both solid waste.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, nobody, or at least I wouldn't, and those in my district who I speak for and have a voice for will not disagree with your statements that it is a very good and worthy cause, and we should always do such things with the current monies that we're already paying, the current taxes that the waste haulers are already paying through the rate payers, and continue to do those very worthwhile efforts to clean up our environment, ensure that things aren't always in our landfills, because they are increasing. There's a landfill in Representative O'Neill in my district. So we're very aware of that, very worthwhile. Are we not doing that already with current dollars? Are we not already trying to be good conservationists of our land? Are we failing in that effort? Is this why you bring this bill?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, our population continues to increase. Our garbage continues to increase. And the fees that were applied here haven't.
Well, just lastly, then, I'll be done with this. It wouldn't be so bad. So worthwhile, I think I can see that the efforts are worthy of a discussion. But on top of the $2 billion in tax increases yet the DFL is proposing this session, it's yet more tax increases for the consumer and the families and businesses in Minnesota. And at one point, it's going to be unsustainable.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hanson, I'm glad you mentioned Representative Hornstein and his attempts to change the 70-30. I think, Mr. Chair, Representative Becker-Finn, I think you said in your comments that there's not been any attempts to change that 70-30 split. So, and if you didn't say that, I stand corrected. But obviously, there have been attempts to change that.
Mr. Chair, I was referring to the bill.
Becker-Finn, you're referring to the bill.
I was referring to the the bill itself.
That's fine.
Anything further, Representative?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we've had a conversation about the rates haven't changed in 22 years, but can staff or someone tell me how the revenue has changed in 22 years? And I know that's Michelle was kind of on the spot here and moving towards the witness table, but I think that
should go back to 1997.
No, I'm not expecting that. You know that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Oh, we might have Mr. McCann.
Mr. Chair, I'm just reading from my testimony, and perhaps this would help. In 1997, the total tax revenue generated was $36.2 million. And I don't see it in my notes, but from my recollection in 2018, the revenue collected was approximately $83 million. Okay. And if you may, I'll make one more comment. The 70%, to clarify, to my understanding, the 70% that is currently going to the MPCA is going to, the name is an environment fund. That's not dedicated to solid waste. So that's not, there isn't 70% of that money going to solid waste management right now.
So, Mr. McCann, is the, so from $36 million to $83 million, is that because of a rate increase or because of usage or tonnage or whatever? What's the reason for that?
Mr. Chair, if I would estimate, you know, inflation is part of it, but also significantly the scope of services of what's being done is increasing. An example would be in 1997, organics was just part of the garbage that you put away, and now we have separate programs to separate organics. Recycling used to be source separated, where you put stuff into containers separately, and all those things, you know, the public wants more automation. So when we receive a container that's got all these recyclables mixed together, it costs a lot of money to mechanically separate that.
Sure. So, okay. So I'm just going to, Ms. Schill, did you have anything to add to this?
Just,
okay, very good. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that was my point. Even though the rates haven't changed, obviously the revenue has changed significantly. So I don't, and again, I support what the SWCDs are doing, and I know that in the part of the state that I represent, there's actually a good working relationship between the SWCDs and the counties. And there's a long discussion here, and I'll have comments at the end of the, if you'd allow me to do that before we move on.
Sounds good. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know, we have seemed to have a knowledgeable witness there, and I know that our testifier, our author is very knowledgeable. The revenues have gone up, but how much has garbage gone up in the volume over the years?
Mr. McCann or Representative Hanson?
Well, Mr. Chair, the revenues have gone up because the garbage has gone up. We continue to produce garbage, and we're running out of landfill space, and this is why we're producing more garbage. We have more people. We have different garbage. We are trying to deal with different pieces of that garbage. We are having to do things differently than we did before. I'll go back to the Emerald Ash Borer. When we had Dutch elm disease, you could take the trees out and burn them in the open. You can't do that anymore. So in this bill, well, in the bill that's in the environment finance, we've got to find a way of managing these wastes. We are all producing a lot of garbage.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And personally, I don't want us to look like the movie WALL-E in about 20 years. Thanks.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 2763? Please come forward. So, thank you. And welcome. If you'd please state your name for the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Sheila Vanney. I'm the Assistant Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts.
Very good.
I want to express gratitude to Representative Hansen for bringing forward this bill. Obviously, we have been working on funding issues for some time for SWCDs. We've calculated a $28 million per year annual shortfall for SWCDs and are seeking $14 million, half of that from the state, through general fund appropriations. So this amount that's in this bill is a step in the right direction. I think the fiscal note is showing $3 million, but obviously there are concerns from stakeholders as to this being a source of funding for SWCDs, and I'm not knowledgeable about this fund, obviously, and what all it is used for, and can't speak to that necessarily. I would want to express concern then about the insufficiency in the amount of this funding at $3 million per year is not adequate for meeting the needs of SWCDs statewide. It leaves us $11 million short. And then to the actual language on the allocation of the funding, if we look at 4.7, the distribution, we do have concerns about the grants being competitive in nature. Funding for SWCDs, for the people that we hire, the boots on the ground that have ongoing relationships with landowners across the state, shouldn't be competitive. We should be getting a base appropriations that is predictable and stable in nature so that we have the manpower to be working with landowners on making conservation changes on the landscape. I don't need to tell you all of the good work of SWCDs, but our duties do continue to grow in our statutory obligations, and so we do continue seeking from the state, like I said, an adequate, predictable, and ongoing source of revenue that makes the SWCDs whole. So I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else? Representative Petersburg, is a question for the testifier?
No, just in general.
Very good. So thank you very much. Anyone else from the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 2763? Okay, so we're back to – so I'd like to finish this up in about 3 or 4 minutes. If this goes further, I know there will be more discussion. So we've got 4 people on the list. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to get into just basic, you know, the purpose of this particular bill, and I could be wrong, and matter of fact, people told me that quite often, but my understanding is a tax policy, especially one that is specific to this for a specific purpose, you're using it for two reasons, either to impact people's behavior or to impact the actual program that this is to benefit. And I guess the question that I have for the representative is how does this do that? It sounds like will this really impact people's behavior on reducing their waste? And the other is how does it impact being better efficient to recycling when we just heard from the previous testifier that the environmental fund it doesn't guarantee that the money that we collect actually goes to improving recycling or even the use of recycling. It could be used for other things. So I guess I'm concerned about whether or not we're actually accomplishing what we want here.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, if I could have the Pollution Control Agency come down and describe the governor's initiatives that were included for that are part of the spending? Or do you not have the time for that? I could just reference.
Representative Petersburg, you want that?
Well, not at this time, but okay. That just kind of reiterates the fact that if we needed that clarification here, then it should have been at another committee. And so I think that just proves the point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And hopefully just a couple quick questions. So it's my understanding, and hopefully Representative Hansen can clarify this, and we can do this quickly, but it's my understanding that this applies to waste and doesn't apply to recycling. You know, I know those are different trucks that pick up those things from in front of my house. And my understanding is maybe recyclables and the source separation, that's not taxed.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Becker-Finn is correct.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I mean, there, I guess, to the last questions as far as we could recycle more, and that's not taxed. And then the SCORE grants, Representative Hansen, do those primarily go to one part of the state? Or are they going to you know, kind of statewide, every county?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Becker-Finn, they are statewide.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
I'll make this brief, Mr. Chair, because you want to get on. Representative Hansen, you're probably aware, I'm going to presume, of organic digesters. Randy Sanitation in Delano is, I think, currently in the process of perhaps building or very close to. And in doing so, 80% less will go into the landfill, or they'll digest most of what they pick up from the refuge and turn it into energy. And then the biofuel, they'll be able to fuel all their vehicles, they got many of them, with some of the biofuels that they'll derive from that. So don't you think it would be a better idea, instead of taxing our refuge haulers, to give them tax incentives to be able to build these organic digesters that will be able to create organics and less in our landfills and create energy, clean, affordable energy? Don't you think that would be a better idea than to be taxing them? We need to be encouraging them. Matter of fact, I had a bill to do such that, but it didn't get far a couple of years ago, but we'll continue to work that. Don't you think that would be a better idea?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I'd love to visit and take a tour, if you're willing on that, to learn more about it. And don't have an opinion right now.
Yeah, thank you.
There you go. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm going to go back to my original comments on this. Yeah. We can tell from the conversation we've had here that the intentions, I think, are noble, but the fact of the matter is we haven't heard from PCA, we haven't heard from Bowser. The comments from Representative O'Neill about the Energy Committee, the Environment Committee that I serve on, I mean, I can see where this could actually even go to Commerce, possibly, because of the impact that it's having. And the comment about the Lisle-Lagarde bill earlier not being re-referred to some other committee, it's because that fund, this bill is impacting the funds that are in the Environment Committee. What Representative Lisle-Lagarde did, it didn't impact the Environment Committee with regards to the tax policy. But this is obviously generating a big conversation. I didn't vote with the prevailing side on the motion, Mr. Chair, obviously, but I would strongly encourage you to possibly reconsider. And one other quick thing, your coach, too. I love the new definition of KISS, how that came out today. That was interesting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Hansen, any very short closing comments?
Appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. Representative Becker-Finn renews her motion to lay over House File 2763 for possible inclusion of the tax on this bill. Thank you very much. Representative Joachim, House File 2809. Representative Joachim, would you please move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2809 for possible inclusion.
Very good. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2809 is the authorization for the Metropolitan Council to issue bonds for regional transit capital projects. Met Council issues these general obligation bonds to implement the Council's Transit Capital Improvement Program. Regional transit bonds are not like state general obligation bonds. They're funded by the transit debt service levy collected on the transit taxing areas within the 7-county metropolitan region. These regional transit bonds are generally sold as other bond debt is retired, so there's minimal impacts on local property tax for debt service. That is normally how bonds usually generally outlive our forecast windows. So the authority to authorize these bonds has been sought and enacted since 1989. Under Minnesota Statute 47.3.39, the bond proceeds are used for replacement buses and capital improvements for the whole entire regional public transit system. This includes funding for Metro Transit and all other public transit providers in the region, including Metro Mobility, opt-out programs, and other small urban and rural dial-a-ride programs. These bonds allow Met Council to provide the 20% local match to receive the 80% of federal fund. And I have Judge Hutton here from the Met Council to answer any technical questions members may have.
Okay. So questions for Representative Joachim or Resource Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Joachim, I know that in the transportation bill, Section 2 was talked a lot and was included in that bill. Did we hear Section 1? I just don't remember that portion of that. And or is that in the current transportation bill?
Representative Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yes, we did. We hear both sections. In fact, the original bill was just Section 1. Section 2 is the amendment by Representative Torkelson that I accepted as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Thank you. I want to clarify that because I couldn't remember that specifically, and I forgot to bring that bill with me. So thank you.
Anyone else have questions? How about from the audience? Anyone here to testify for or against House File 2809? Representative Joachim.
Thank you, and I would ask members for their support.
Representative Joachim, reduce or motion to lay over House File 2809 for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Chair Davis. Welcome to your committee. Would you care to move your bill, Chair Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move House File 1851 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and I have an amendment.
Very good. Would you like to move the A1 amendment?
I will move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Anything we need to know about the amendment, Chair Davis?
Chairman, I have no idea what it does.
Very good. It looks to be pretty minor and technical.
It's
here.
It's a technical amendment.
Very good. So I'm going to call for a vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted.
That was close.
Yes, it was. Chair Davis.
Thank you. To the 1851 was amended. What we're looking at is removal of the bonding requirements, and we add liability language related to motor fuel tax collections. The Department of Revenue annually reviews licensing for petroleum distributors and special fuel dealers. In early 2018, the department changed an administrative policy which resulted in requiring surety bonds from licensed petroleum dealers as a means of ensuring tax collections. Due to the policy change, many petroleum distributors are now having to buy bonds at great expense, excessive expense. House File number 1851, as amended, repeals the bonding provisions listed in the statute. In addition, it adds language designed to increase the personal and corporate liability of the company owners to ensure the department has the ability to collect the bad debt. This law has been on the books for a long, long time, but it was never used until last year. The department has not had problems collecting money in these cases, and by forcing these bonds upon our small businesses. I have a gas station, a lot of gas stations like everybody does in their district, but one gentleman called me up and his bond is $13,000 for nothing. It's for a bond that will never be used because they used to give their financial statements and were on the hook like that. I'm not aware of any problem anybody's ever had in collecting these monies but yet now they have to buy these bonds. I don't know if this was lobbied for by the bonding companies. I'm not sure, but they're the only ones that seem to. I mean, that's a sweet deal for them because they're selling these bonds that will never have any payments made out of them in all likelihood. It hasn't been a problem in the past for the department to collect these monies. In the bill, we're upping the financial responsibility of these companies and many of the small businesses that own these motor marts. And, you know, they put their own name, their own company, their own resources on the line to make sure that this tax is paid to the Department of Revenue. And I've had no one come to me saying, oh, we have a problem here. So all of a sudden last year, they have to buy these bonds, as I said, at great expense. And they're very regressive bonds. I have a witness here, Mr. Chairman.
Good. If you'd please state your name and provide your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Tim Gross. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Petroleum Markers Association. I was going to read my testimony, but I think Representative Davis, I will not repeat many things he says. I just say in early 2018, our licensed distributors, our members, were informed by the Department of Revenue that due to changes in bankruptcy and personal liability laws, personal guarantees, corporate guarantees, and personal financial statements, along with our S corporations, LLCs, and limited partnership financial statements, were no longer going to be accepted as proof of ability to pay the tax liability. So the department moved and required the surety bonds by means of ensuring the tax collections. That change of last year cost our members an average of around $19,000 a year. And it's really our middle members that are really being affected, our family, small business businesses that are being affected by this. Our largest members, our holidays and our quick trips aren't affected, and our smallest members, because of their personal financial statements, are accepted as individual business owners. But our mid-sized family businesses that are S corporations, in the past decades, we are allowed to present our personal financial statements and our personal wealth in our S-Corps to be accepted in combination to prove that financial responsibility. And the department, because of their policy administrative change, will not allow that to happen. So you can see why an S-Corp standing alone could not do that. But the individual single stock owner of that S-Corp personal financials could not be accepted. Also, I was, just to finish up, also I was a CFO of a licensed distributor for the last 25 years before taking this new position. And for the last 25 years, I presented the department with, we were a family operation that had been in existence for three generations. We had, because of estate planning through those generations, we had five different legal entities. We had C-Corps, S-Corps, limited partnerships, general partnerships. All the same three family owners owned all those entities. Because of the change of the law, the one entity, the license that held the license for the distribution, was not able to prove the financial responsibility, where before I would combine all entities and was easily able to prove that. And that was accepted by the department for 24 years prior to that. Because of this, we were forced to look at a bond of $20,000 last year, an annual expense that was put on our family business. So I'd like to say, thank Representative David for bringing this important issue and offering our bill. Thank you.
Very good. Sir, I know there's someone from the department that would like to testify. Ms. Johnston? Thank you, Mr. Gross. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Merkert and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Beth Johnston, and I'm with the Department of Revenue. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The department appreciates this bill's inclusion of the personal liability to ensure the state's interest can be protected. This can be a useful tool for collecting delinquent tax obligations, but also a lengthy process. While we understand the goal of the motor fuel distributors in eliminating the bond requirement, we appreciate their willingness to work with the department to provide an appropriate amount of security for this type of tax. We reached out to Rep. Davids about this bill and hope to keep working with the author to ensure the state's interests can be protected in an efficient manner.
Ms. Johnston, are you aware of any problems you're having right now with not receiving payments?
I'm not quite sure right now. I can check on that, but I'm not aware.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the way it was done in the past, yes, this what we're trying to amend here is on the books. It was there, so the department had every legal authority to do it, but there is no reason to do it. I mean, let's say Representative Schumacher and myself own convenience stores or gas stations. You would just take one look at Representative Schumacher's financial statements, see that no bond was necessary whatsoever. So I do not believe that the department has collected on these bonds, yet tremendous expense to these small businesses, and how much in losses in the past, I'm not aware of any. I did some investigating. I couldn't find where the department has lost a nickel on any of these. I couldn't find where they've collected on any of the current bonds to date.
So, thank you. Mr. Gross, so the $20,000 bond, is that a one-time expense, or is that an annual, or is that just, how does that work exactly?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that is an annual expense. A brand new annual expense for our company. That would have been for our company. And the members that we talk about these are all new expenses. And if you look at what is our risk difference, as we're trying to explain, there is no risk difference. And the state is just, there's this is an excessive protection that was not used. I look back the last couple of decades, I could not find a case where there was a default.
Any questions from members? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this forward, Chair Davids. I don't know for sure what the solution is, but we have just all kinds of, I mean, Danny's Outdoor Sports convenience store in Roseau, Minnesota, for example. I mean, I saw what happened in their property tax statement, what happened this year. And these ongoing expenses, Mr. Chair, I would implore you to work with Chair Davids and these folks to see if we can't come to some sort of a resolution and give them some relief from this, what seems to be an unnecessary expense. But please, thank you.
Thank you. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have the answer to Chair Fabian's concern. The solution to this issue is passing House File 1851 as amended. If we don't, I'm going to continue my due diligence in looking at buying the bond company that sells these bonds, because it's a sweet, sweet deal.
So this bill would take it back to where it was prior to. And so explain that. What is the procedure there? Again, just one more time. So, Mr. Gross.
So the proving financial responsibility isn't being changed. There were some changes, rule changes or policy changes with the department. But as it stands now, you had to prove that it was three times your monthly gas tax liability as net assets in your entity. So where we're trying to go back, that's fine. But what we're trying to go back to is accepting, just like a bank would do, if you're an S corp. They don't just look at your S-Corp. They look at your personal financial statement, your personal guarantee, or your other corporate guarantees and bring it all in. And that's what was done in the past. We just want to be treated the same way any type of other liability that we have in our company, to be treated that way. Instead of having the, can you imagine bonding every type of liability you have in your company? That would be ridiculous.
And this change was made 2018? Or just recently, Mr. Crow?
Yep, May 31st, 2018, we're required to buy the bonds. So we're coming up on another purchase of bonds again this year for May 31st.
Very good. All right, any other questions, or Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, do you know how much revenue that has produced so far for the state?
Mr. Gross, Representative, there were impacted about, that required new bonds were around 70 to 80. By the average of 19,000, I'm not good with math, so the math is too many numbers, but it's well over $1 million. Okay. And we've had a great conversation with the Department of Revenue. That they've been great in discussing this topic. We all came to the conclusion we're not here to make the bonding companies rich. We've got to come up with a solution on this, that the state is protected for collecting the liability and that we don't have any undue hardship of our members.
Very good. Any anyone else? That would like, in the audience, I'd like to testify on House File 1851 as amended. Siri Nunn and Ms. Johnston, thank you for your testimony. And Chair Davids. Any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The department, without these bonds, which are totally unnecessary and are a burden to the small businesses, the department has many tools to get your money. They don't need this. They know where you live, and they will come and get your money. They're very, very good at it. So this is unnecessary. It's an undue burden on our small businesses. And I would renew my motion that House File 1851 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Chair Davids makes that motion. So thank you so much. Members, just a quick announcement on the release of the tax bill will be around 8 a.m. on Monday morning. So that had earlier been Sunday evening. It'll be Monday morning at right about 8 a.m. And so then on Tuesday, there would be a walkthrough on the bill and testimony. And then on Wednesday, we're looking at markup on the tax bill. So that's kind of the agenda. And then we'll be hearing other bills, I think, next Friday, Thursday, and we'll be hearing more bills next week. I don't know if we're going to go Friday or not. I don't know if that's a day.
Room.
Yeah, in the awful room.
Turn the heat off.
Yes. So, members, have a good and relaxing weekend. We'll have a busy week next week. We are adjourned.